Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the In the Crease Podcast. It is post first round weekend. I am Dan Abram, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, joined today by my esteemed colleague.
I'm Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside Lacrosse.
And Kyle, then there were eight. We are on to the quarterfinals. The first round is over, and what looked to be a promising weekend of matchups may not have panned out that way.
I mean, that's fair, but like everyone that's like, oh man, these matchups sucked. We should have gotten different ones. So this is what happens when the selection committee screws up. It's like, settle down. Settle down. I mean, come on. You can't predict what's going to happen in a game. That's why they play the games, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the most surprising result to you off the top of your head?
None of them are actually really that surprising. I feel like maybe the margin of victories in some games were surprising. Or the way things played out surprising.
That's fine. And we all know which game you're talking about.
Yeah. We'll get to it. We know which one it is. All right, let's just go through in chronological order with all these games. First game of the Saturday slate, Towson 12, Penn State 8. Towson's rope unit shuts down Penn State's offense, particularly the midfield, the Cider House rules, and the seniors deliver on the other end.
Yeah, man. There's something to be said for a line of defensive midfield that can hold you scoreless. I mean, you know, it's been Penn State's kind of weakness all year, and Towson really jumped on it. I love Jack Adams. I have him as my first D-mid off the board in the upcoming MLL draft. Towson is a super disciplined team. I was talking to a friend of mine who was like, how is Towson beating Penn State? Isn't Penn State good? I'm like, yeah, Penn State's offense is really good. But, you know, Sean Allen is a great coach, man. Towson has really come a long way from, I mean, I remember in the early 2000s, they were like a joke. They were getting killed. And he comes in and kind of changes the whole philosophy of the program, makes it very blue collar. And you saw, you know, what that does when a team has that much, you know, toughness and self-belief. You know, that's a tough team to beat. And I mean, I gotta say though, goal of the like first round is Mac O'Keefe scoring from his butt. That was an amazing goal. I loved that goal. That goal should get goal of the week.
Yeah, we might have to include that along with the special Cloutier goals he scored against Albany. But I think you're absolutely right. You know, Towson, quite the experienced team, really. I mean, you look at the past 3 years and what those seniors have been a part of. You know, 2015, they play in the play-in game. Then they go on the road to Notre Dame, give them a scare in the first round before falling. Last year, play in the play-in game, go on the road to Denver and beat them, and then go to the quarterfinals and lose to Loyola. This year, this team was ready for this moment, and I don't think Penn State was.
I don't know if it's not a thing of being not ready. I think that they had too many weaknesses and Towson had far less weaknesses. It's a matter of game planning and eliminating a team's, you know, maybe not their strength because they didn't eliminate the attack, but if you can kind of neutralize everything else besides just three guys and have those guys be limited in their production on the day, that's a great recipe to win. And we saw teams do that throughout the weekend. I just think that Towson did it, you know, the most effectively. Let's not forget, this game was very close in the first, you know, first half, for sure. Yeah. Teams just, like, trading possession shots back and forth, not being able to hit the net. And both goalies actually, when they could hit the net, the goalies were in the way and making great stops.
Another thing we have not mentioned yet is Alex Woodall. He was crucial in this game, and his health will be crucial going forward, but he's a physical challenge. You know, he got the best of Arcari a lot at this time, and I thought possessions were a huge part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the most underrated stat in lacrosse, is how many times do you have the ball? How long do you have the ball is maybe not as, you know, I mean, I know you're a soccer fan, but there's a lot of teams that are elite because they possess the ball, but it doesn't always win them games. You know, like Barcelona comes to mind. Yeah, Barcelona comes to mind. Your team, Arsenal, comes to mind back in the day. But the time of the possession and the number of possessions and the quality of the possessions is really what matters. Lacrosse is not a game of holding the ball. You can't just hang on to the ball anymore. The stall clock's still a half measure, but it's still a measure. And being able to execute when you have the opportunities is everything. And I just don't think Penn State did that. And, you know, it's tough, man. You can't rely on a freshman to carry you in that particular area of the game, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think I read somewhere that Towson had possession in the final quarter for like 9 minutes. 9 minutes. I mean, that's like, if you're on the Penn State side, then you're like, man, like, we don't even have a chance to get back in this game because we're not going to get the ball back.
I mean, the other thing possession does is it tires out the other team's defense. Yeah. You know, it's actually far more tiresome to play defense than offense in lacrosse. I mean, absolutely. Maybe that's not true in every sport, but, like, it's definitely true in lacrosse.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. But, you know, got to give credit to Towson, man. This is a tough team. Like you said, very disciplined. Built to win. They know who they are and they know how to win. I think they'll be a tough out for Syracuse next week in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I think Towson's a punch me in the face team.
Explain.
I think they need to get, you know, we were talking about goalies that were like this. I think this is a whole team that just likes taking it on the chin for a couple rounds. Yeah. You know, just
I think they like being disrespected
up.
And kind of.
Well, I mean, maybe they don't like being disrespected, but they use it. They're very good at self motivation, shall we say? And the extra motivation comes when the other team produces, and they're like, okay, that's your shot. Okay, I'm going to throw, you know, my combination now. You know, back up. I'm going to throw my haymaker. And you know, with Towson, Cuse has. I mean, let's be real. Cuse has more talent.
Yeah.
At least offensively, but I mean, Towson is not to be underestimated in the next round.
I feel like they're a team that if they execute in the ways that they have built themselves to win, they're a team that is just hard to beat. Like, they win the faceoffs, disciplined on defense, and, you know, their guys hit their shots. This is a tough team to beat.
100%.
All right, second game of the Saturday slate. Promising matchup, not so promising result. Duke 19, Hopkins 6. Yikes. Zoink Scoobs, like Duke just ran us off the field.
I want to bottle all the Hopkins fans' tears and drink them in the offseason. Didn't everyone predict this? Not like this, but everyone predicted Duke winning by at least like 4 that I saw.
I think you're a little bit right. I kind of predicted that Duke would win, but 13 goals, like blown out, like the worst loss at Homewood in like 50 plus years or something like that. That's insane. Like, I don't think anybody saw this coming.
Yeah, blown out at home. Gutterding upset. Gutterding upset. Goes off for 10 points, 4 goals, 6 assists. I mean, you know, we actually have a lot of perspective when it comes to, like, you know, players that react to, like, our coverage and other people's coverage, and also, like, the coverage of, like, the Tewaraton Award.
Yeah.
Do you really think that he went off for 10 points because he was snubbed?
Maybe. He didn't cop to it in the press conference because we asked him. He's like, oh, you a little mad? He's like, nah, we don't talk about that. What I do think, though,
I think
this team took it as a slight that they were the last team in the tournament. I do think that. I said, man, 12-4, we're the last team in the tournament. Took Syracuse to 1 goal in the dome. Like, come on. Let's go prove it against Hopkins, who got a 6 seed in a home game.
Well, yeah, because the committee looked at early Duke.
Yeah.
Can't look at early Duke, man. Early Duke was terrible. Let's be real. Duke fans, your team was awful to start the season.
I mean, you lost to Air Force, who just got beaten in this weekend by 7 goals. So. But yeah, you know, speaking of Kyle, this game started with Kyle Rowe absolutely dominated at the faceoff X, 18 of 24, 15 ground balls. Defense did their job, even though Hopkins, you know, kind of felt like they never had the ball. And when they did, they just never put together any offensive consistency or rhythm. And then we can't not mention it, 10 points for Gutterding, 4 goals, 6 assists. You know, it's just like I was really impressed with his passing from that top left position. And I'm not sure if that's something that was on tape for Duke a lot. I feel like Gutterding really is like an X or a wing kind of operator. And I think to see him actually invert to a midfield set was a little bit throwing off for Hopkins.
It's the new fad of the postseason, man, the reverse invert.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a little reverse invert, a re-invert. a revert. I don't know. I talked about it earlier when I was covering the Bryant Monmouth game. Bryant was doing it with Tucker James a lot, and you know, our esteemed publisher Terry Foy was like, reinvert, revert. I like them both. What do you think?
How about the inverted invert?
No, that's like way too long. Come on, we're trying to make everything shorter for everybody. But speaking of shorter, why is everyone so shocked, man? What happened last year to Hopkins?
Blown out in the first round.
Yeah, all they did was break Dylan Molloy's foot. That's all you did.
Yeah.
I just like, they've been so inconsistent all year. The blinders are so on for Hopkins fans, man. Like, I hate to be the one to tell you this. Like, your team was wildly inconsistent and did not deserve the sixth seed at all. Yeah.
No, they did not. They benefited from the RPI. I mean, the RPI had them as the second, like, strength of schedule. That factored into the account. But, like, look at what they did in the past two games before this game. Losing the Big Ten tournament and then blown out by Maryland. Like, I don't know. It's tough. I mean, we're not going to get too much into the seeding and the selection kind of.
Oh, don't problem. Back down. Don't back down off your little point here. You trying to get away from it?
What's that?
What's my point? You have a little note here,
which is
Petro is legit on the hot seat. Is your note
okay?
Say okay. It's on here. I'm looking at it. You wrote it down. Explain yourself.
I mean, I just think that. I think this program kind of needs to take a look in the mirror and see what's going on. I mean, I feel like the alumni are really pissed about the way the past two seasons have panned out. I mean, it's like, what, 16 and 14 over 2 years, blown out back-to-back, you know, first-round games. I mean, I really didn't think you could top how bad last year's first-round loss to Brown was, but this one was even worse. It was at home. Like, just like, yikes. It's just like, what's happening? Where's this team going? Where's this program going?
Take the cuffs off, man. Let the offense create.
I mean, what would this team be without that 2015 Final Four berth?
What it exactly. Is now. Yeah. What have Shoulder you done shrugs. For me lately, man? Don't bring up. It's funny. Like I was going to bring this up later, but I was looking on Instagram and there was like this whole movement of all the pro players to give their picks for Final Four. And every single Hopkins player had Hopkins in the Final Four. Everybody had – I mean, it wasn't just them. It was every person gave their alma mater, basically, to be in the Final Four, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those things where, like, obviously you played for a team, you rep your team, but if you're going to be honest about your team, I don't know how you think this particular Hopkins team was getting, you know, past this Duke team. Especially with how well Duke has played. You know, yes, they lost in the ACC tournament, but I mean, this is a tough damn team, man. And this team has more toughness than last year's team. Because I think last year's Duke team relied a lot on Miles Jones and Damer Class to create. And now the set is creating. The matchups are creating. They're not just running through two guys. They run through everybody.
Mm-hmm. A very, very balanced effort, I felt, from, obviously Guterding had a big day, but I felt like the other guys getting in. The second midfield was outstanding. A lot of guys who probably weren't at the top of the scouting report had big days. But, also chronic problems for Hopkins in this game were especially damaging. Goalie play, absolute disaster, you know, worse than the Hindenburg. And then the shorties, absolutely out-muscled by the athletic Duke guys.
All right, we got to do the sideline swap ad, right? Let's get this done. Let's do this now. I'm going to talk to you guys about a phenomenon that is unfolding across the lacrosse landscape in terms of gear. The high school spec heads aren't going to be legal next year. This is it. However, this is great if you're looking to get a head for a box, if you're looking for a summer ball head. These things are half off. Everywhere. Yes, the retailers are discounting them, but I'll tell you where the big discounts are, and it's sidelineswap.com. One of my favorite heads. I've said this 100 times if you've listened to me on any of the other podcasts. The Centric U is my favorite head that came out in the last couple years. The high school spec version is all over the place. You can grab one on Sideline Swap for as low as $40 right now. super easy. Sign up, set up your wallet, and you're ready to start buying. If you're trying to sell older gear or you're trying to get rid of your high school spec head, Sideline Swap is the place to do it. Go to sidelineswap.com.
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear, find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more, or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely, list in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit sidelineswap.com today to get started. That's sideline, SWAP.com. The third game from the Saturday slate, Denver 17, Air Force 10. This one kind of went the way I think we thought it was going to go, Kyle. He's closing his eyes.
Huh? What?
Baptiste started with him, 23 for 27, three goals for Cannizzaro. Didn't think he dodged as much as I think you would expect him to. The other guys actually had a pretty good day. You know, I've kind of been a little bit critical of those guys. But also, Denver's D, just MEH in this game. Meh, you know. I have not been, you know, super impressed with that unit as a whole at all at any point during the season. Just a little bit too much ball watching, a little too much crime scene investigation after a goal is given up. Thoughts?
So I haven't been impressed with Denver all year.
Yeah.
That being said, I haven't watched them as much, and we're going to get to this later when we talk about the IL All-American teams. There are teams I don't see a lot of just because of where I am, you know, in – New England. It's tough to see them, or I'm not getting a stream with them, or they're not on TV. Denver wasn't on TV that much this year.
I don't think they were on ESPNU once this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got to see them play in person and get, you know, roped by Marquette in the Big East tournament. And, you know, that's when I thought I saw, like, Cannizzaro look a little hobbled. I mean, we were texting during the game, and, you know, you were like, oh, well, Cannizzaro's still scoring. I'm like, yeah, but, like, look how they're using him. He's kind of the hinge guy. He's not really the guy that's running the offense per se. He's the guy making the pass to finish the offense. And I thought that was really interesting. Maybe they just don't want to use him to his full capacity against an Air Force team where they knew that ball movement would win the game for them. But, I mean, I do agree with you on the defense as well. I didn't think that, you know, the thing about Denver that strikes you when you first see them, and for me seeing them in person a couple weeks ago, they're huge.
Yeah, big dudes.
This team is huge, especially long pulls. But there's also a lot of knee braces on that field. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Big dudes, you know, if you swing the ball, they're very strong, they're very able to stuff dodges, but if you swing enough, you know, you can get decent shots. And it's not like Air Force got destroyed in this game. They kept it fairly tight early, but you know, Denver just had too many horses. And it's one of the one of those horses is Baptiste, man. He's the Kentucky Derby winner. He's killing it. He's the guy that's going to make this team be better than good. He's the guy that makes them great. And I think that I thought that was Cannizzaro before I watched them play, but now I truly believe that it's Baptiste. And in the next round, you know, good luck stopping King Tuna in the next round, guys. Like,
yeah, I think that's a very good point, though. You know, Baptiste, if he was actually at F&M right now, I think this Denver team would not be nearly as good as they are.
I don't think they'd be in the tournament.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting. All right, Kyle, that one was brief. Let's move on to ding, 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 the main event of the weekend. Albany 15, North Carolina 12. This... tale of two halves in this game, man.
Go throw your shade. Do it. Throw your shade. I got a lot of it on Twitter. I'm ready.
What's that?
Throw your shade about how this game wasn't good.
I just don't think it lived up to what my expectation for it was. And that was, it was going to be a back and forth game. It was going to come down to the final 2 minutes. One team's going to have a possession and get the game-winning shot. It was going to be finish 18-17. That was my ideal, you know, vision for this game and for, you know, Albany to blow open the first half and then for Carolina to storm back. It was fun. I'll say that. I enjoyed the game. But if Carolina hadn't stormed back, we would have lost the whole weekend.
I thought it was great. And I think you don't – think it's great because you don't rate comebacks because you're a millennial and you're already sick of them because so many happened in the past 2 years. Let me tell you something, Dan. I was a fan of comebacks before they were cool, Dan. Okay? Comebacks are awesome.
I know, and I know that you know.
Okay.
But here's the thing. I will cop to that. I've been desensitized by the amount of comebacks that I've seen. I mean, look at that Syracuse North Carolina ACC tournament game. I was like, oh, a 10 goal comeback? Nah, been there, done that. SMH, Kyle?
It's SMDH. So listen, you got some notes here about what Carolina did in the first half that didn't work out for them. Do you think it's down to the zone? And that they played aggressive man in the second and rode hard? Or do you think it's just really like a momentum shift after they scored their first few goals and started winning faceoffs? Because that's what I would go with.
I mean, obviously a little bit of both. But, I think that for whatever shooting that Albany experienced for like 20-plus minutes in the third quarter definitely plays into that. But I do think, adjustments across the board. It started with winning faceoffs, and then it started with getting extra possessions. And then before you know it, Cloutier has a ridiculous goal, and then they're back in it,
Yeah, I thought that UNC was just not looking at their opportunities and not moving the ball well in the first half and started getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And then Albany just took advantage of it. They couldn't buy a ground ball, and Albany just took the game to them. But I thought that what changed in the second half is that UNC started hitting the backside. The backside was open. It's just Albany was sending the first guy. And then once they started sending the first guy close to the crease, UNC started feeding the crease. And that's how they started scoring easy goals. Or I mean, maybe not easy, but closer to the goal goals instead of taking, mid-range shots like they were doing throughout the entire first half when they kind of like dodged themselves into a circle and then realized that they couldn't get past one guy. So they weren't moving the ball. They were just moving it on to the next guy, and that guy would try something. And then they move it to the next guy, and he would try something. And that's like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
It just is. Like, that's, screw dodging yourself into a hole and then passing on to the first guy you see and then, like, being like, all right, you got to cut. You got to set picks, And that's one of the things that Albany did really well in the first half is cutting, setting picks, waiting for the double to go on Fields. And then Fields feeding out of the double. I mean, you had to know that they were going to do that.
Yeah.
And I just don't think UNC's defense adjusted from the backside enough to stop any of those tallies. And, let's be real, a bunch of those goals, especially in the first quarter, probably should have been stopped. And, you saw Balcom get pulled. And then the same thing happened to the next guy. And then all of a sudden, Balcom's back in the game. That's like a coaching panic move. And I'm not saying like they weren't justified in doing it, but I've never seen that move work where you take a first guy out and then the next guy gets shelled the same way the first guy did. And you put the first guy back in. That's like a weird headspace to put a player in. And Balcom is very good. And it was tough to see him get pulled and then thrown back in and be like, okay, well, we didn't believe in you first time. So now we do. And I've done that as a coach, and I actually got yelled at the first time I did that by a head coach I was working for, and he was like, why did you just pull the backup? And I'm like, he just let in 10 goals. And he's like, yeah, you can't put the first guy in. You got to let him take his medicine. You can't put the first guy back into that situation. Like, we pulled him for a reason, and we only had two goalies. And I was like, well, okay, well, you want me to, like, destroy the backup's confidence? He's like, he's the backup, which was a good punctuation to that story. Which made a lot of sense for me.
Pazula is also their future, too. I mean, like, top-rated goalie, probably going to be a starter at one point in Carolina's future. We look at, people have made a point that if you wreck a goalie's confidence in his freshman year, does that carry over going forward? Possibly. I mean, it could happen.
I mean, we'll see. What did you see from Albany in this game?
Saw them capitalize on a little bit of a lazy zone, a little bit of ball watch city in the first half, and then just what? You're shaking your head.
Nah, we should stop doing that. I don't like that. That's become our thing. It's upsetting.
You started it.
I did, but then I stopped it. It's like a leaky cauldron, man. Can't do that. Can't do that, man. Sorry.
There were two players of the game for me in this Albany game. T. T.D. Yerlin in the first half, pretty much unstoppable, and then J.D. Colarusso in the second half. You know, not the most consistent up and down kind of game for him, but timely saves in that fourth quarter, I think, was the real big difference in the game.
That's a good point. Fields being Fields.
Fields can't stop him. You can only contain him.
No, I think teams should just let him get his points and try to stop everyone else.
I think that's a good point.
Because Drake and Ray are the guys you need to stop.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe just trying to shut up the faucet isn't the best way to go. Maybe just making sure the buckets don't get any water is the best thing to do.
That is some woke analogy.
That's why I run an analogy school, Dan, right there.
I know, man.
Right there.
That was like the meme where like it starts with like a simple brain function and then the brain explodes by the end of the meme. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
You've seen those memes.
I do.
You're a person of the internet.
Let's roll on to the next game.
All right. First game from the Sunday slate, Notre Dame 15, Marquette 9. Kyle, I feel like this is an opportunity for you to harp on me. But I'll give credit where credit is due. Finally, some other guys in the Notre Dame offense step up. 5 goals for Gleason. 4 goals for Brendan Collins? Props to those guys, you know. Garnsey and Perkovic were not 100%. They played. They looked healthier, but they were still probably not up to full speed. And these guys had a tremendous game and shouldered the burden.
Yeah, B squared took it to you, man. I think Notre Dame faithful were listening to the Dan Abram hot takes on Notre Dame has a bad offense. I mean, they put up a 15 spot against Marquette, man. I mean, a lot of that came from. I'll be honest. I saw Cole Blazer play the game. Maybe I saw the best games of his life in the Big East tournament, but he was definitely at fault for several of those first goals. I mean, and it's funny because like if you watch the replays on those goals, he's like an inch away from making the save, but they're all stick side. They're all stick side, man, and they're not close. They're like from 15, 12, and like extreme angles with a guy in the way. That's got to be a save. And, you know, I'm not putting it all on the goalie, but 34% is not going to win you any games against anybody. I think that Notre Dame really dominated the middle of the field. And I think Marquette was not expecting that. And I wasn't expecting that from Marquette, if I'm honest. I feel like that's kind of where they do a lot of their damage. And, mm-hmm. Yes, they won 19 of 28 on faceoffs, but how many of those faceoffs were immediately followed by a turnover?
How many?
A lot. And it, you know, it was great to see, you know, them score that kind of half field goal with the assist from Blazer to kind of bring them back into that game. But, you know, they couldn't score a man up, and it just, you know, they got outworked, which is not something I expected to see from this Marquette team after they ran roughshod through the Big East tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the stats, and it would clearly indicate that Marquette should have an advantage in this game the way they performed off the floor with ground balls and the way they won faceoffs. But got to give a lot of credit to Notre Dame in the middle of the field, particularly on the ride. Man-down defense was great. 5 failed clears, 0-for-4 on EMO for the Marquette offense. You know, you're absolutely right. You know, this defense did their part. It hasn't been a linear progression for their defense, but they had a great game in this one.
And I thought Notre Dame, you know, not for nothing, we did our video previews, and I said that Notre Dame would build from the back. I didn't know they would build that much. I wouldn't know they'd build an entire city from the back. You know what I mean? I also thought Doss, one of the things that I said in the previews, I thought Doss had to have a good game for them to win, and yeah, he had a great game. And not great in terms of he made like 20 saves, but in terms of the saves he made were so timely that they stopped any hope of Marquette run. Over and over and over and over, and all of a sudden, you know, Notre Dame's up by 6, and Marquette's mm-hmm. like, "What happened?" One of the big questions I have coming out of this game for you, though, is how big of a loss is Koshansky if he's actually out for the next round? Because we saw him kind of go down with what they said was an ankle. I guess they said it was an ankle on the sideline, but it's on the same knee that he has the brace on. You know, like how much of an impact does that make on their defense?
I think it does, because you got to prop a replacement right in there, and at the most critical point in the season, going against a team that you kind of routinely always have a tough game against in Denver. We know this is going to be a close one, And they're going to be playing a lot of defense if Baptiste is able to feed them possessions consistently.
Yeah, and I still think they're equipped to actually absorb a lot of that attack. But at the same time, you know, you're going to have someone else step into that role that knows what to do on, you know, the second or third attack.
Absolutely. And this is a team that doesn't preach individual matchups. It preaches team defense. And if there's a guy out there who hasn't been playing as much, that is cause for worry for sure.
Absolutely. Any other thoughts on this game?
Like you mentioned before, Marquette, 19 of 28 on faceoffs. Good luck against Baptiste. I will say this. Sean Mayle has not played in the last two games for Denver. John Sexton on the field, clearly the best LSM if he does not play. So it could be huge off the floor.
Is that All-American snub, John Sexton? Or no, we're not there yet.
All right. Second game from Sunday, Maryland 13, Bryant 10. You know, this one kind of played out like I thought it would. You know, Bryant was going to try and slow down the Terps with the zone, but then, you know, Rambo and company kind of just took over in the third quarter. Thought Rotans was particularly great and in a zone offense. You know, not great depth for Maryland offensively, but I think their starting six is stellar. It's just great.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I was watching during the broadcast. I believe Quint said that Bernhardt was an attackman playing out of position in that midfield. I still think that he's the best initiator on the Maryland offense. What are your thoughts on, like, kind of how they're deploying him?
Well, it's interesting because he's had, you know, a quiet couple of weeks, but that's because he's drawing the team's kind of first LSM. You know, every team is electing to take him away in favor of another guy. You know, I think some people are double pulling the midfield with Kelly and Bernhardt, and they're maybe putting a shorty on Dylan Maltz because he's kind of known to be an off ball guy. But, you know, Bernhardt, I think you have to respect him. This is an elite athlete, a guy who could have played, you know, option quarterback at the Naval Academy, dodging for this team. And no team is sleeping on him because he will burn you if you do.
What about the fourth quarter run there? How are we feeling? How are we feeling, fam?
My dad made a good point about the 5-0 Bryant run to end the game. It's something Tillman can yell at the team about for the rest of the week. So it's like they're not off the hook in preparation this week with that run. But, you know, it's like Maryland, you know, started to take a little bit of their starters out. And then all of a sudden they start scoring. They're like, all right, put the starters back in. Darn it. It's what happens, you know? I'll say this. The Maryland starters are not coming out at any point in the game against Albany. You can be up 20-1 with 2 seconds left. And, you know, Tim Muller and company are not coming off the field.
You had an interesting debate I saw on Twitter with a couple people about Muller versus Fields and how Fields, for lack of a better term, worked him over in the first matchup. How do you feel that's going to shape up in the next round?
I don't know, because I actually feel like we said, you can't really contain Fields. I mean, you can't really stop Fields. So you just have to kind of contain him. But I actually thought Tim Muller played a pretty good game against Connor Fields in that Maryland game, but they did elect to put him on an island and kind of make the other guys beat them. And the other guys, you know, stepped up in that game. Actually, like I said, I thought Tim Muller played his hands well, forced him to go to his offhand and but defended the behind the back pass. You know, it's like, I really don't know what else to say.
Yeah. It's funny. I think we're teasing this a lot, but we're going to get into our All-American selections and, you know, basically just the process and how we got to them and how we did our votes. Not exactly what our votes are, because ain't nobody opening that bag of snakes. But it's funny, like, what makes a great defenseman, right? Is a great defenseman a guy that zeroes out his matchup? That's kind of what everyone thinks, right? That's the typical definition of a great defenseman. But really, a great defenseman's role is to play within a unit. Is to lead a unit, is to accept his role, and to really the thing in lacrosse that's different about a lot of other sports is it's hard to stop great scorers from scoring. You're always playing with your back to the goal, right? And he's always facing the goal. He's always going to have the advantage. So the best thing you can do, and what great defensemen do, is they limit what the attackman can do by putting them in an uncomfortable position.
Yeah,
and that's what you have to do. And I just don't see, you know, a lot of that happening this whole season. I and we were talking about this too, and I jumped into the discussion. It's what defenseman stood out?
Right? Are you asking?
No, I mean, I don't. I mean, it's sort of a rhetorical question because, like, I don't think anybody stood out. Do you? I mean, there's there's like a top, you know, 10 guys that we know are good, but we don't know they're great. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, like, I'll make this point later. Everybody wants to say that, you know, Ben Randall won the Schmeiser Award for holding, you know, Patrick Spencer to one point in this game, but we'll kind of talk about that later. But I think you're right. There has not been what I say, like, a Landis-level separation of a guy as a cover man. You know, everybody wants to say, oh, this guy is like your Darrell Revis, your, you know, Richard Sherman, takeaway corner kind of defenseman. But we really just haven't seen that. There's a few guys who are worthy, and I think Tim Muller is one of them. I mean, you talked about roles. I think his role in that Albany game was pretty clear. It said, hey, we're not going to slide the field, so you're going to get them. If, you know, if the other guys get beat, you know, that's where we're going to struggle. But he did his job in that game.
That is what you have to do. You have to make him score.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to...
Because if you play him, that's going to open up the lanes for everybody else.
Right. If you send a guy, yeah, it's going to open it up. And if you play a zone, it's going to open up him and give him extra time with the ball.
Yeah.
So.
It should be an interesting rematch with those two. All right, let's move on to the game we kind of just mentioned. Ohio State 7, Loyola 4. If you took a nap during this game, you did not miss anything because it was a snooze fest. Overcoached to death, in my opinion.
I mean, thoughts? It's not just your opinion. I think that's a lot of opinions, but that doesn't mean they're wrong. You know what I mean? That's not, yeah. It's not wrong.
No, I just, went into the weekend thinking that this would be the second best game of the weekend after the Albany, North Carolina game, just because I felt like this had promising matchups within the matchup, but it just didn't pan out that way. I kind of just felt like very survive and advance workmanlike attitude from Ohio State said, we got the lead. Let's just hold on to it and escape. Get on to the next round with no kerfuffle.
I'm going to throw out a theory here. And okay. I gave it to you earlier, but I want to warn everyone, if you're a Loyola fan, IO publisher Terry Foy, earmuffs. Maybe Loyola wasn't that good. Maybe the Patriot League wasn't that good. Thoughts?
I actually agree. And that was one thing that I was thinking about during this week. I was like, I said to myself, why does Ohio State feel like a 5-goal favorite in this game? And I think it's just simply because you look at Loyola's body of work, and it just kind of felt like this doesn't indicate anything to me, really. You know, it's like they lost to BU, close games throughout the Patriot League, and, you know, we saw in the Patriot League tournament that not even those teams could really stack up in the end against Loyola. And I said, well, what does that say about Loyola? Are they going to contend with the ACC and Big Ten teams like they did last year? I don't know.
I also just think, to roll back a little bit of that shade, I think Loyola is kind of a product of their system insofar as they're playing so many Patriot League teams that they don't see the elite kind of teams that they saw in the past. Yeah. Yes, their out-of-conference schedule was good. I just think that they, week in, week out, you have to kind of prep for the same sort of player in the Patriot League, and that player isn't playing in the Big Ten or the ACC in terms of, I hate using this word as like a catch-all to describe like how good a player is, but like athletically, speed-wise, size-wise, all of that, those guys, the best guys are playing in the ACC and the Big Ten. That's just like reality. And you come across guys that are outliers like Spencer, who is big but not super fast, but his ability to control and work a game is so good that you can put guys around him and build around him. But when you play a team that has, you know, all these defenders and all these systems that have played against better teams than yours, that already know it, a game plan for someone, you know, Ohio State, game plan for Maryland, game plan for, you know, teams, even teams like Rutgers and Penn State, like those are teams that you have to key in on more than one guy. And I think with Loyola, you're able to key in on one guy and make the other guys beat you. And this is the ultimate example of a game where those other guys didn't even come close to beating you.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, Ohio State, you look at Rutgers, Hopkins, even Maryland to some extent, they've all game planned for teams that have a quarterback and that also have great guys off the ball who are going to try to open up opportunities for themselves and for other players. They've been through the ringer with that. And I don't know if Loyola can honestly say that they, you know, maybe you could say Navy with Chris Fennell game planned for a guy who's going to try and take away Pat Spencer and Ben Randall.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's you're waiting for the next guy to make the next step. You need another guy to pair with Spencer, and it just didn't happen this year.
Yeah,
we thought it was going to be Romar. We thought it was going to be Sherlock. It didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people seem to center in on, you know, Ben Randall holding Spencer to one point as the story of the game, but I made a point on Twitter that's like 1-for-23 shooting from his teammates. Sherlock, Drapow, Dennis, and McGovern, 1-for-23 shooting. It's like Spencer was getting those guys the ball. They just weren't hitting the cage.
Yeah. And then
they were carrying them up.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think, well, let's turn it over to looking at Ohio State. And, yeah. You know, your boy, my boy, Chris Rosenthal had maybe the tweet of the weekend. Good luck to Ohio State in the next round because scared money don't make money. You got to take your shots and go up instead of controlling and keeping your foot on the throat. Sometimes you need to step on the neck. And I don't think Ohio State stepped on the neck in this game.
No, they did not. They were like, they saw him on the curb and they said, we'll let him bleed out.
Wow, that was dark.
Good analogy, though?
It was dark.
That was some American History X up in there, man.
Yeah, it was.
Moving on, Syracuse 11, Yale 10. Oh my, we must thank the Dome Gods for this game. Because in my opinion, it really did bring the weekend to a good point. You know, I think 7 of 8 games didn't play out as exciting as we hoped. This game lived up to the billing. We all knew it was going to be a one-goal game, and that's how it panned out. And our House of Assassins came through once again.
Team of Destiny. Team of Destiny.
It's just like, I wanted to put this on our notes, but it's like, there's just no rhyme or reason really to it. This team just finds a way to win every single week. It's one guy who has a big game. In this game, it was Evan Malloy with 15 saves. He did the John Wall after the game, man. He did it for the city and the fans.
Yeah, that upset me because I hate John Wall right now. He's killing the Celtics. God.
Damn, man. What were they thinking? It showed up in D.C. Get out of here.
Yeah, whatever. You guys deserve to win one game, I guess.
One narrative I did not see emerge on Twitter or in conversations I had with people about this game, but Connor Mackey, man, what, 18 of 22 on faceoffs? Ben Williams got schooled in this game, and I was not expecting that at all.
I think it's a problem for Cuse in the next round to address. I don't think Ben Williams has been himself all season. And, you know, it's funny, at the beginning of the season, I was talking to a couple MLL coaches, and they were like, well, you know, we're probably going to try and draft Williams and have him kind of understudy for a year and then hope he just like really just turns into the next, like, you know, next beast. And I don't think that plan's happening anymore. I think teams are waiting for Baptiste, but I don't think anyone's waiting to draft Ben Williams. I don't even think he's going to be the first face I got off the board.
Yeah, I mean, just a little bit too much of a history of injury probably is probably what's going to hold him back.
Well, he's a face-off guy, and he injured his shoulder. I mean, like, that's all. That's a career ender for a lot of people. That's why people stop taking draws. I mean, we've made this point before, but face-off guys getting hurt is like, you know, the sun coming up the next day. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of, like, how bad is it? Can they recover? And, you know, do we have a backup plan?
And how effective can they be when they play hurt?
Right. Because no one plays hurt more than face-off guys, right? Yeah.
And a big part of the game next week against Towson is the faceoff battle between him and Woodall. You know, is Woodall healthy? First of all, we'll see. We're not going to speculate. But you know, one of the things that people bring up about Ben Williams, the other guys who play him, is that, you know, what's one word that describes Ben Williams? It's like freak athlete. You know, what's 1 to 2 words that describe Ben Williams? Freak athlete. And I look at Alex Woodall. What's he? Freak athlete. Big dude taking draws. It will be a physical canceling out. So it really could come down to who's got the quicker hands, who's got the better instincts.
I think it's the wings, man. I think that's a wing battle. That's got wing battle written all over it. Who can adjust? Who can make plays off the ground? And the next round is definitely going to determine that. But let's kind of get back to the game. You know, unfortunate for Yale. I think everyone's got a taste of Ben Reeves that hadn't been watching him all season.
Yeah,
what were your thoughts on him?
Just outstanding. Tremendous dodger. He looked every bit the part of a Tour Ton finalist. And if we're being perfectly honest, you know, this kind of came down to who's going to have more of a Tour Ton case in this game between Sergio Salcido, who was a possible snub for the finalists, and then Ben Reeves. And Ben Reeves absolutely had his Tour Ton moment in this game. I mean, he took Furman to the rack and scored, man. I don't know what else to say.
He scored, yeah, but like, I don't think it invalidates Furman, though.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this is the point I also made when we were talking about defensemen earlier. Like, defense is the hardest thing to play in lacrosse. Like, you can play amazing defense. Let's say you go up against, and I've used this example a billion times, but it's the best way I can describe defense to people in the sport of lacrosse that is different from other sports. You're playing one-on-one against a guy 15 times in a game. You strip him 10 times, but he beats you for 3 goals. He wins.
Yeah.
You don't win. He wins. He scored 3 on you. You know what I mean? That's why it's tough to like gauge how great a defenseman is or what level he's at, because everyone has their weakness, right? Yeah. Everyone has their guy that they can't, the type of guy that they can't stop. You know, and that's what this is. It's matchups. It's matchups and opportunity. And I think that, you know, there's defensive stats out there that just aren't even invented for lacrosse yet that would really tell us a lot. Like, I don't know, dodges against versus passes out, you know, stuff like that. I mean, it's stuff that you accumulate after watching a player for a long time, especially an offensive player. Like, oh, he doesn't like when you do this. I mean, that's really what your job is on defense. Make the offensive player not like what you're doing. Don't let him get comfortable. I mean, yes, Reeves had a great game and Furman was on him for a lot, but I don't feel like Furman didn't do a job. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they still won the game. That's kind of all that matters at the end of the day.
I mean, at the end of the day, too, like their defense played pretty well. I mean, they had to rely on Evan Malloy a lot, but, you know, they gave up 10 goals against, you know, a top scoring team in Yale. This is a dangerous team, and I think other guys like Gaudette had his chances and he did finish them, but I think overall they didn't let him kind of, you know, run loose on the crease. And then guys like Jackson Morrow, Joey Sessa were contained, and it came down to just limiting Reeves. And this is a guy who, you know, routinely goes off for 5+ points in games. And this is actually kind of a little bit of a mild production for him, but still a great moment from him.
Devil's advocate against Cuse. Too much swagger?
Maybe. I mean, I feel like, you know, maybe they buy into that whole Team of Destiny stuff too. And they said, we're just going to find a way to win every game. We don't need to blow teams out. You know, maybe there is an element to that.
I mean, they're not going to be playing in the dome again.
Yeah, and that's what I worry about. I feel like, you know, there's a little bit of dome magic that played into this game. I think playing in front of their crowd helped them in this game. And I don't think that's going to be the case when they go to Newark. You know, all the northern teams are going south and all the southern teams are going north in this quarterfinal draw.
Yeah. Any other last thoughts on this game?
Really like the balanced effort from the scoring from Syracuse in this game. I think that's just something that's going to have to pan out if they're going to win a national championship, is that they can't rely on Salcido and Mariano to carry them every single week. We've been saying that all year, though.
Yeah, at some point that's going to be true, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
they just keep disproving us, man. The House of Assassins just keeps.
Listen, we've cast our lot. You know, we're going to have to ride out the Cuse train as far as it goes. And, you know, I'm kind of like a D1 atheist. I don't really kind of believe in anybody. I don't root for a team. I didn't go anywhere in D1. So, you know, and there's no northern teams left. Like, I don't have anybody to root for. So,
Kyle Devitt, the D1 atheist. I love it.
Yeah, sports atheist, except for New England teams. I don't know. There are worse teams to root for than this Syracuse team, man. At least they're fun.
Yeah. It's right? A fun team to watch, you know.
Yeah.
They get your heart rate up, but a fun team. All right, before we go into a quarterfinal preview, we're going to delve into some of our segments. We know who the Tourettan finalists are, so we're not going to do Tourettan Watch. But one thing Inside Lacrosse did Sunday night was release their media first team All-American list. We're going to talk about our process and the way we voted. Kyle, I'll let you open it up first.
All right, so I actually put this off because I take it pretty seriously. It's a big responsibility, man, to put guys and pick guys on a list that you can influence. You know, each one of us had an equal vote, and there was a lot of people that voted in this, as evidenced by guys being on the first team that I didn't vote for. I'm not going to say who, but I didn't put them on any teams, and they're on the first team. So
yeah,
somebody really outvoted me. But my first thing that I did, I got out a piece of paper, and I wrote down all the guys that I liked watching all year, all the guys that I thought were good. I wrote them all down regardless of position. Then I regretted doing that because I had to sort them by position and write on a new set of paper. So did that. And then I went to systematically ranking them, and my tiebreaker was stats in the end of the day. And it's probably not the best tiebreaker, but I went with gut and stats to kind of make those tough decisions. I will say one of the things that maybe you don't like this, but I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be real with you. I put a lot of freshmen and underclassmen on the third team because I want to see you earn it. I did not put any freshmen or underclassmen or sophomores on the second or first team. And you can hate that all you want. That's fine. I'm totally at peace with doing that. And I don't know if I'm the only one that did that, but I can tell you just from, you know, my experience and my viewpoint that I believe that players have to do more than one season to be on first or second team All-American lists. You know, and on the flip side of that, I don't believe that people should make lists because of name. And I can tell you, as someone that watched a ton of weird games and a ton of weird teams, I guarantee you I watched way more weird teams than you did, if you're listening to this. I watched crazy games. I watched like Quinnipiac Monmouth triple OT stuff. You know what I'm talking about? That real hipster cut. I got that. And that informed a lot of my voting in terms of guys maybe snuck on there that maybe you hadn't heard of. I will tell you off the bat, I put Tate Boyce on the third team as the goalie. Okay. I did. And I don't feel bad about it. You know, I know we're not really trying to talk about players or justifications, but explanation wise, I had goalies that I saw and saw in person that kind of gave you an edge. If I saw you in person, you did really well. That's just me being honest with you and telling you how it went down. But after I ranked everybody, used a series of not so complicated tiebreakers, I just went after it, man. I didn't second guess. I didn't go back. I didn't change anything. I just went because I thought that 45 minutes to like whatever an hour of prep is along with all the knowledge that I've kind of accumulated, all my opinions I've accumulated throughout the season, was enough to make that list. And I feel really comfortable with what I turned in, even if it's very different from what is out there now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like the accumulated knowledge just kind of made the list, you know, easy to make. My process was I kind of, you know, had a short list in my head of guys who I would consider. And then what I kind of did the same thing as you. I went into their stats to kind of see, oh, maybe like this guy deserves a nod because he has more ground balls. Or maybe this guy deserves to be more of a first teamer because he has more calls turnovers. I know one thing that was big for me was that I looked at overall scoring defense, and I said, if you are in the top 10 in scoring defense, that must mean your guys are doing something right. So I look at those teams and say, who's the top cover guy on this team? If he's a good player, in my opinion, and he's on a top 10 defense, I'm putting him in as a first teamer. That's kind of how I did defensive things.
Interesting. Okay.
I actually believe that I put a freshman on the first or second team. I'm not going to name who. But I'm definitely in agreement with you a little bit about how, you know, you do have to earn, you know, your overall career comes into play when you're a first team or second team All-American. You know, Matt Rambo is probably the perfect example of this on the first team. You know, he's a little bit of an outlier statistically this year. He's outside of the top 10 in scoring and points, but he's on the first team because I think, one, people look at his overall career and his impact at Maryland. And two, I think people give him a little bit of a benefit of the doubt because Maryland played the number one strength of schedule. I definitely was a little surprised with some of the selections, and I kind of went into the voting saying, ugh, I don't really take this that seriously because I know that my votes are going to get muddled out by the massive voting. And that's kind of what happened. Like, my first team was radically, well, not radically, but definitely some differences than what the final poll showed.
Yeah, I just catching a lot of heat, catching some hands on Twitter. It's fine. Like, whenever you do a list, people aren't going to like it, but people love lists. It's like this beautiful catch 22 that almost like defines the internet. I would just say, like, people reacting to this for the rest of the week, because this is what people are going to talk about for the next couple days. Just like, be respectful. Don't just be like, start swearing to people on Twitter, which happened a little bit yesterday. Like, just like, engage us in a proper way, and we'll engage you back. Like, I have no problem. You know, people were chirping me this weekend, and I have no problem engaging them until you get disrespectful. So, you know, just kind of like, be mindful of that. And you know, you can be right and I can be wrong. That's part of life. I don't need to be right about everything. So, you know, if you have a great point, espouse it. We'd love to hear it. Hit us up.
Yeah. And just another thing is that, like, this was a poll that was voted on by, like, I don't know how many people. Don't, like, come at us with, like, a personal insult saying, oh, you guys rigged the list. I was like, but we didn't. Like, I want to put my full vote out there because I believe in accountability. And, you know, you can issue an insult against my personal list and we can have a conversation about it. But it's like, don't you know, like, pull the straw man out and, like, say, oh, these guys were responsible for the way this list panned out. These three guys or something like that. It's just like, no, man, like, come on. Just like, be informed before you come at us. That's all I'm going to say.
That's fine.
Kyle.
Yeah.
Weird watch of the week, man. Let's do it. You go first, because I got quite a few.
All right. Weird watch happened when I was in my car. Not that I was watching something in my car, but I was driving this weekend through the it's not a city. I don't know why I almost said city, but through the town of Manchester, New Hampshire. And there was a guy just like riding my bumper the whole way. And it's, I mean, I'm talking, this is like a 45 degree, you know, miles an hour zone, right? It's on me the whole time. And I look in the rear view a couple times and he's looking at something else in his hand. And I'm like, what is he doing? What is he doing? And we get to a stoplight. Yes, New Hampshire has stoplights. Ha ha, you're hilarious. He is using one of those hand spinners while he's driving. Like, have you seen those? Like, you grasp it between your middle finger and your inner thumb and you spin it with your forefinger. You seen those?
I don't think I have. But oh, I think it's something that's been going on the internet, right?
Yeah. So, which I thought, since it's on the internet, Dan Aber knows what's going on.
I got to hit up R out of the loop on that one.
Like, I guess. Reboot, retry, ignore. So he's spinning this as he's driving, and he's behind me the whole time, and to the point where I think he's following me. I turn into my apartment complex, and he finally just whizzes past me up Main Street. But the whole time, I'm talking like 20 minutes, spinning one of these hand things in traffic. Like, you are a crazy person. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And he's looking at it as he's doing it. Sorry, I just wanted to tell that story. It's like the craziest thing I've seen in a while. Also, I saw Guardians 2. It's hilarious. I like it. Let me get on my nerd box for a second. Y'all want to call me like a nerd or a dork, that's fine. But guess what? If you watch any of the Marvel movies, you're a nerd too. It's cool to be a nerd now. Yeah, man. Sorry, you lose. You lose, bro. Sorry. Why do you think Under Armour and all these other companies are making like superhero mock t-shirts for people to wear during workouts?
Because it's cool.
Because it's cool. You're the one that's not cool now. How's that feel?
Damn.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle. Got some great weird watches for you, man. We were texting Wednesday night because you were watching the playing game, but where was I at?
Metallica.
That's right. Not exactly Pearl Jam, but I did go see Metallica open their North American tour in Baltimore last Wednesday. Great concert, but man, was this a weird watch. So I'm watching the concert. We're about halfway through. I'm like standing there just enjoying myself. Then all of a sudden, I see to my right, huge mosh pit breaks out. Some guy tries to throw me in. I'm like, nah, man, like, this is my first time seeing Metallica. I want to see the band, man. Like, if this is my second Metallica show, like, I'd be all about this mosh pit and, like, you know, people fighting and stuff like that. But I was like, man, I want to see Metallica. I'm 24 years old. I'll probably never get another great chance to see them again. Anyways, you know, there's this one like 350-pound guy bouncing around the mosh pit. I have to keep, you know, keeping my elbows up, stay vigilant. And then to my left breaks out another mosh pit, man. So like if we're talking two circles, I'm like in that little sliver between the circles, just like trying to have a good time. And I'm like, I guess this is what I was asking for. Get in the pit, man.
You're just trying not to be concentric. I feel you.
But very interesting. One of the guys in the mosh pit got knocked out during Master of Puppets. We had to like do an impromptu distress signal to the paramedics to get him out of there. Not a good scene. But
what'd you overall, do, like shoot a flare? What are you talking about?
We all like put our flashlights on our phone and tried to wave to like a cop or something like that. And I was like, then the cop tried to like figure out who had, you know, knocked this guy out. I was like, dude, it's a mosh pit. People are like flying at each other. Like, give it a rest. They all did it.
Anyways, have you ever been in a mosh pit?
I have, like, actually. Ever? I've never been. All right. So my first mosh pit experience, this is a great, great topic, was when I studied abroad. Me and my friends used to go to this club called Coco. And every Friday night they would have, you know, like an indie band playing, and there'd be like an indie band mosh pit, but there's no like level of comparison to this kind of mosh pit, a freaking Metallica thrash metal mosh pit, man. Like I saw that one 350-pound guy, you know, bashed into like a 6'4", 250-pound guy. This guy freaking suplexed him. He was so mad and the fight broke out, and then they like, all right, stop fighting. Come on. Like everybody just loves Metallica. And I'm like, all right, interesting place. Favorite song, probably For Whom the Bell Tolls, because that was the first real, quote-unquote, real Metallica song that they played. But the whole ending, you know, they start with, like, one, then they went to, like, you know, Master Puppets, Fade to Black, Seek and Destroy to end the show. You know, Enter Sandman was their finale. Good time.
I can't believe you didn't go in a Metallica mosh pit for, like, at least a minute. That would have been awesome.
You know what? All right. You were right. I was like, you know what? They were playing some bad songs at the time of the mosh pit. I should have gotten in for a little bit, but I don't know. I didn't want to miss the good parts, man. Like I said, next time around, I'm in that mosh pit.
Wasn't Dixie there?
Dixon was there. He was way up in the nosebleeds, kind of. I saw his picture. I was like, man, I had the complete opposite experience as Dixie.
You know who I bet goes in a mosh pit?
Who?
Dixie. I'm just saying. I'm not saying it makes him a better person. I'm just saying I wouldn't want to see Dixon in a mosh pit throwing hands.
You know who I could easily see in a mosh pit?
Who?
Sleeveless Tee and all.
Jeff Shannon?
Well, he was there, actually, but he was also in the nosebleeds. Nah, man. Quint Kesnick, man. I could just see him like, come on, man. I wrestled way back when. Let's go.
Yeah, mosh pit isn't just like doing double leg takedowns on everybody around you, though. That's a pretty easy way to get chucked out of the venue. Just my experience. I don't know. I did a lot of the mosh pitting back in the day, but I don't, you know, I'm too old for that now. I just get hurt.
Yeah, I got two more little weird watches, but How You Like Me Now by The Heavy is the championship song for the postseason this year. I'm going to say it now. I hate that song so much. It is on the Spotify playlist for songs that have been played to death since 2010.
But hate hold it. On, time out.
All right.
Is it better than Centuries by Fall Out Boy or any Imagine Dragons song that has been on these NCAA things in the years past?
No.
This is a very crucial question.
The songs are better.
That is categorically false. I'm sorry. That is not true.
You are false.
No. Dude, you're picking Fall Out Boy. I want you to get out a mirror and look at yourself right now. Pull out your phone and just stare at your own visage and just say into it, I'm picking Fall Out Boy. How does that make you feel?
Getting out my my camera, I'm picking Fallout Boy. There we go.
Now Snapchat it like a good millennial.
Also, so there's another commercial that seems to be coming up, and it's this Volkswagen commercial that has Simon and Garfunkel's America. And, you know, Terry's like, oh, what do you think about this commercial that's literally played every single break? And I was like, well, first of all, they're basically spreading the grandpa's ashes at the end of this commercial on the West Coast. I was like, how do you not think of the scene?
That commercial's wicked
sad. How do you not think of the scene in The Big Lebowski when they're just trying to throw Donnie's ashes in the Folgers can and it just flies straight in the face of The Big Lebowski, the dude, man.
Spoilers for Big Lebowski, Dan. God.
True. And then, oh, yeah, man, I love that commercial. Nothing screams America like the car company that was literally started by Hitler.
Oh, no.
Yes, take.
Nope. I'm not. Nope.
Yes, take.
I just disengage with you on this podcast. No.
All right, Kyle, let's move on to our quarterfinal preview. Whole lot of weird watches this week, man.
I'm reeling. Just give me a second. Okay.
All right, first game on the slate in the quarterfinals, Ohio State versus Duke. In my mind, these are actually two pretty similar teams. Great goalie, great faceoff specialists, dual threat at attack, athletic middies, good defenses, and they like to play fast given the opportunity. I actually think this one could be pretty up-tempo. I think Duke's going to find a way to open it up early in the game, and Ohio State's going to have to match with their range shooters and with their craftiness.
I think Duke is better. I think Ohio State is overcoached and too reliant on their defense, and I think Duke's offense is going to explode in the fourth quarter to put the game away by 5 goals.
All right, I like that take. Next game, Denver versus Notre Dame. I like Denver simply because of Baptiste. However, I kind of mentioned this earlier, Notre Dame will defend Baptiste off the draw. Denver wanting to play in settled 6-on-6 offense will benefit Notre Dame. That's their strength. Also, no Sean Mayo for Denver against Air Force. Going without him with Sexton on the field, no bueno.
I have not liked what I've seen out of Denver all year. And every time I've slighted Notre Dame, they have slapped me in the face with a white glove. So I'm going to go with Notre Dame, controls this game, wins by 2. Denver makes a late play, but can't score on the Dosser.
Next game, Towson versus Syracuse. Kind of mentioned this earlier. Towson's tough. Their rope unit is built to take on a midfield like Cuse. That's going to be an interesting matchup. Woodall's health will be huge. Otherwise, I see Williams dominating. And I think I would pick Towson if, you know, you look at the matchups. But hashtag assassins, man. They just prove us wrong every week.
I mean, they don't prove me wrong. I don't really pick against Syracuse ever. I think there's two scenarios here. I think one of the scenarios is Towson, you know, doing what they did against Penn State in the first round and kind of dominating the ball and controlling the middle of the field and stopping Syracuse's breaks and preventing them from getting unsettled situations, and in which case I think Towson kind of wins by 4. The other scenario is that Syracuse is Syracuse and keeps it tight the entire way, goes goal for goal with Towson, is able to kind of shut down their unsettled situations and doesn't allow and makes them work in the 6 and makes the refs call stall clocks because they hold the strong side so well. And then Syracuse again wins by 1.
Yeah. I think one thing that Syracuse is really good as we always talk about, you know, their 60th minute heroics, but I think keeping it a close game for 59 minutes is an underrated skill that this Syracuse team has. Cause there were points in that Yale game where Yale could have stretched it, but you know, Syracuse kept punching back. They were there at the final moment and they just made the play. All right, last game of the weekend, a real doozy, a rematch from the regular season, Maryland versus Albany. This could be said about, you know, Denver versus Notre Dame as well, but it's tough to beat a team twice in the same season, and I think Maryland's going to have their hands full with Albany this time around again.
Okay, I think, again, we're going through, like, scenarios and, like, picks, which I actually hate doing, but I'm going to do it because I already did it for, like, 3 other ones. I think Albany learned a lot about themselves in the game against UNC. I think they learned what they have to do, what they need to do, and what they must do to win games. I think that Maryland is always going to be Maryland, has not learned from any of their mistakes all year, and will finally fall to the Danes.
All right. But here's the thing I want to ask you. Do you think Maryland's going to watch that second half tape of UNC and kind of try to do what they did defensively?
No. Because I don't think that that's what happened. I think that was a tempo move. I don't think that that was a UNC playing amazing defense kind of swing. I think that was Albany, you know, settling and trying to kill the game instead of hitting the gas pedal. They could do that, and they could take some things from it, but I don't think it's the deciding factor at all in how that game played out, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Two more notes I have for this game is that I don't see a scenario where Ireland doesn't dominate, so I think the Terps are going to have to find a way to get possessions other than the faceoff X. And then two, this kind of is a toss-up game for me, but I think Maryland is going to benefit from a full week of preparation as opposed to like the 2 or 3 days that they had the last time they played Albany. I think Maryland's a much better team when they have the full week to game plan.
Man, it's like you went to Maryland.
I know. I went to Maryland. That's why I know just had a good team when they have a full week of preparation.
I told you not to do this when we set up the segment. Don't do 4 points on Maryland when we get to Maryland Albany. And you did it anyway. I respect that.
All right, everybody. That's our show. A pretty decent first round. We cannot wait to bring you our reaction from the quarterfinals. So many promising matchups. I said 3 of 4 of these matchups seem like Final Four worthy matchups in themselves. So obviously looking forward to that. I'm going to be on site with my mans, Christian Sweezy, for all 4 games. We're doing a big, hefty road trip up to Hempstead on Saturday and then down to Newark, Delaware on Sunday. So I'll be on site. We'll still have the reaction for you on the In the Crease podcast on Monday.
Yeah, thanks for checking us out. You can find me. I'm the Gear and Lifestyle Editor. My name is Kyle Devitt. On Twitter, at TheKyleDevitt, and also on Instagram.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter, at DanAbram2423. Just a reminder to listen to the rest of the podcast the rest of the week, D-Fly and Dixie on Wednesday, and the Quentin Foy Preview podcast on Friday. As for us, though, we appreciate the listen. We'll see you next week. Inside the Cross Podcast.